This is the Everybody's Talking at Once podcast for November 26th, 2013. I'm Drew Messenger Michaels.
And I am Lucio Valentino.
This is the Everybody's Talking at Once podcast. We're doing a new flavor, as promised. This is kind of a discussion version of the show. We don't know what to call it. Lucio was just saying maybe we call it Ready or Not. We've done absolutely no research about whether that's taken as a name. And that sort of is the point of the segment in a weird kind of meta way. Because what we're going to do is we're going to combine my tendency to over-research with the fact that Lucio doesn't follow gaming and geek culture news of some kinds quite as closely as I do. And I'm going to bring up something going on right now that maybe I've read more about than he has, and we're going to get sort of a fresh perspective combined with sort of an overcooked, soggy, lame perspective on my side. Is that a good representation, would you say, Luce?
I would say that, yeah, that's a pretty good representation. It's not that I'm necessarily lazy. It's just that I know that this stuff tends to excite you. And I actually prefer hearing stuff from people I know rather than I guess I should say I like hearing it filtered through the voices of people I know rather than reading. It's just, I don't know, it sometimes gives me a little bit of an extra interest in the subject. I don't know.
Yeah, totally. No, I didn't mean to imply that you were lazy. If anything, I meant to imply that I'm compulsive, right? That's the difference there. Okay, so first topic, and I picked this one specifically because, you know, I've maybe read more about it than you have, but it's based on topics you're going to know more about than I do. Okay, first I'll blindside you by asking, in Magic, the Gathering, what is a cube?
Well, a cube is basically a user-constructed format. I think it may be sanctioned by Wizards of the Coast, but I am not 100% sure. Basically, it's where a Magic player sets up their own, I guess you could call it, set. So obviously in Magic there are different sets, like the most recent has been called Theros, which just means that it'll be three different blocks of cards that will be released over a year. And so basically what the cube format allows a player to do is to take some of the best cards they have, or maybe some of the worst cards, or basically to find their own theme and construct. I want to say that it's a minimum or a maximum of 720 cards. There's different numbers that people use, but at any rate, what you do with those cards is you compile them in such a way that you can balance it as much as possible, and then you can take that with you, play Magic with your friends. So, for example, my friend Brian has set up a really fun cube. What he does when we get together is we all get a, I guess if you will, a set of packs equating to about 80 or 90 cards. You go through them, find the colors you want, you find what works, and you build a deck on the spot. And what's really fun about the format is that it lets you play with a variety of different cards, and there's only typically only one of each card in the cube. I like
correct
it
me
because,
if I'm wrong. Sorry, what you like it because?
No, I was gonna say I like it because obviously I'm a little newer to the game than he is, but it gives me an opportunity to play with all of these really old, fantastic, broken, terrible cards.
Right, the broken and terrible is what I wanted to bring up. So from what I understand, cubes are relatively friendly to cards that are imbalanced or weird or otherwise not really welcome in hardcore tournament play. Is that?
Yeah, and I would say so. And I mean, the thing of it is, too, that there are lots of different forms of tournament play. I mean, there's Vintage, there's Legacy, there's Modern, there's Standard. There's so many different ways you can play this game. There's Commander, which I haven't even delved into, but is sort of similar in that you can only have one of each card in your deck. Yeah, what's really fun about it is that you can make all of these really wild, wacky things happen, because in a lot of cases, setting up a deck in such a way could be considered unfair. That's why some of them are banned in certain forms of play. Obviously, Magic doesn't really have any sort of set rules. If you're playing with your friend, there's no judge that's just standing over your shoulder telling you can't do that. So the cube is sort of fun because, yeah, you can just go hog wild.
Cool. All right. Thank you for that. So I bring it up because the Indy Custom Cube was this thing that happened a little while ago. It was created by some indie game developers. I think Edmund McMillan, who made Super Meat Boy, The Binding of Isaac, Time Fuck, a bunch of other games. He sort of spearheaded it because he will talk your ear off about Magic if you let him. Pretty much any interview, like he immediately doesn't think anyone's interested, so he'll kind of curtail himself. But he will in fact talk about Magic forever if you let him. He's really into it. So we got together some other indie developers who are really into Magic. I think Phil Fish, who made Fez, was involved. Laura, I think it's pronounced Shigehara. Is that her last name? I always forget. But the woman who wrote the Plants vs. Zombies soundtrack.
Yeah. Just really quick, I want to interject and say that's really hilarious. For some reason, it had never occurred to me that these indie game developers would love Magic, but it kind of makes perfect sense. Just based on...
Yeah. Well, it makes total sense because they're obsessed with tweaking mechanics. They're obsessed with, like, you know, getting together and doing the same thing over a long period of time, game jams or whatever.
And that's what makes a lot of these indie games so fantastic, is that they are really nuanced in such a way that visually and maybe even gameplay, what you're seeing is, it's not necessarily that it hasn't been done before, but it's being done in such a unique sort of little tweaked way. Like Super Meat Boy, for example, is just a basic platformer, but because they took the controls so seriously, it's one of the smoothest games you can ever play, and that in and of itself is what makes it so wonderful.
Yeah, the care they put into how long Meat Boy sticks to the wall before you can wall jump off is like so... It makes it feel better than other games. It's kind of that simple.
Yeah. I think it's on sale. I want to go back and play that game. I really enjoyed it.
Excuse me one second. Wow. We'll edit this part out because I don't know what happened there.
Vitamin C.
All right, I thought I was okay. I'm not okay. Give me one more sec.
Sure. I want the Simpsons standby music. Da, 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 da. It's in Revelations, people!
All right. Wow, that was crazy. I don't know what happened to me.
I think I'll take a little water break myself.
Fuck the human body. Okay.
Yes.
So indie developers, Edmund McMillan, Phil Fish, all these guys are super, super into Magic. So they got together and they made this thing that they called the Indie Custom Cube. And it's Magic cards that they made. They're not from Wizards of the Coast at all. They are fan-made. And they refer either to characters these guys have created. They're like characters from Super Meat Boy or The Binding of Isaac. Or they refer to people and things from the indie community. There's an internet argument card. There's a supportive spouse card. There's all kinds of different stuff, and it's just it was an exercise in making something that was interesting to play, but with a lot of weird, broken, hyper powerful cards. So, it's not up anymore. They had just sort of the whole spoiler or whatever it's called up and ready to download, but they don't anymore. And the reason is there was this giant backlash against it. Saying that some of the cards were maybe racist or sexist in some strange way, and Laura Shigehara actually wrote a blog post sort of addressing that. And just as an example, there was a Lee Alexander card. She's a games writer and an editor and all that stuff. And Kelly Santiago. That's who I'm thinking of. The woman from that game company.
Yeah, actually, she had a card where she image because I was curious. So. Right.
Yeah, yeah. So there were like female developers who had, you know, they would do stuff to other female developers. They could inspire each other, so you could build a deck around female video game developers or video game journalists, things like that. The fact that female was an attribute people thought was weird. There's also a Soldier Boy card. Which is a reference to Indie Game the movie, where Soldier Boy is playing Braid and saying, you know, there's no point to the game, you just do this forever, you know, whatever. So the Soldier Boy card was designed to kill the Jonathan Blow card, to dispirit him and counteract him. He was a foil for that card. So because, I guess in Magic, if you're going to outright kill a character, you're usually a black card. So Soldier Boy is a black card and an unstable black card, which is this other mechanic they put in. So Laura Shigehara's thing was basically like, if you think this is racist, it's because you don't understand Magic. Like, that's just how black cards work. But on the other hand...
Whoa, whoa, What do you mean that's how black cards work?
Sorry, why it got to be the black card? But that's the thing. So she's right in one sense, right? Well,
no, she's absolutely right. Yeah. If that's exactly what black does. There, the three colors that basically deal with creature removal, or I should say all the colors deal with creature removal. White exiles creatures, blue removes creatures, usually returning them to the hand or rendering them unusable on the battlefield by tapping them or something. Black just straight up kills them. There's no sort of secondary condition. They're just usually dead. Red will do damage. That's one way to kill a creature with red, is that you have to do damage to get rid of it. And green is sort of limited to, there are cards that will let you have your bigger creatures fight other smaller creatures or of equal strength, and they just die anyway.
But green are the big strong ones, right? Generally speaking.
Exactly. So yeah, no, she's absolutely right. And it's funny that people jumped on that because that if you're going to make a card that just kills a creature, you want it to be black.
Absolutely. Right. Exactly. So if you know Magic really, really well, so there's two sides to it. If you don't know Magic at all, you say, oh, Soldier Boy is an unstable black card, and why are female cards creatures? And like all this stuff that makes total sense if you know Magic makes no sense if you don't. But on the other side of the coin, if you're completely sort of enveloped in the world of Magic and the terminology, like it can genuinely not occur to you that, oh, from an outside point of view, you know, saying it says Soldier Boy, unstable black, that means something outside of the system of Magic, you know? And so like both are true. And I guess I bring it up because it's a really good example of how the racist, not racist binary isn't that useful. Because, like, yes, it is kind of a problem that Soldier Boy is an unstable black card. Do I think it makes any sense to think they meant for it to be, like, a mean-spirited racial joke? Clearly not. So it's kind of neither nor. I don't know. I think it's interesting, and I was curious what your take was.
Well, I don't know if I would say I have the unpopular view, but I definitely have the non-mainstream view. Racism is one of those things where I just kind of have to roll my eyes. I know in a recent other podcast we had talked about sort of the white privilege aspect of, there seems to be this sort of almost 50-50 of you either don't think about it at all and don't want to think about it, or there's this sort of pseudo white guilt where a lot of white people are sometimes the ones yelling the loudest in terms of what is or is not racist. And
yeah, that's what was surreal here is Laura Shigehara, who is an Asian woman, was talking down all these white men, mostly. Not that they were all white men complaining, but a lot of the, you know, most angry Twitter people were white men saying, oh, that's racist. And it was odd.
Yeah. You know, I feel like I'm sort of in a position where I can't comment because, as you say, if you're a Magic player, it doesn't even occur to you. So there's that. There's also that I am, you know, a person of color, so, and it doesn't bother me, so I don't necessarily think of it as being overtly racist.
Oh, that's cool, because then as a white person, and I'm allowed to like it then. That's nice.
Yeah, I mean, there's that whole issue of it, and I mean, obviously, anyone who has a problem with it is allowed to have a problem with it. If people come out and say that wasn't their intention, I think it's important to take them at their word, and yeah, I mean, I would just say that's too bad. Is that the reason that this idea got kind of shot down? Or
I don't know that it's shot down. The website's not currently up, so I'm sure. I think they're probably reevaluating, and I don't know this for sure. I couldn't find a definitive answer, but I think they might be deciding this is something for their circle of friends and not to be shared with the wider world. And if so, that's kind of sad, because I don't know.
It's sad because it seems like it would be a fun idea, but I mean, it's also, I guess you could say, responsible. We spent some time talking about what's his name, Gabe, and I forget his real name, of Penny Arcade, and how
Mike Krahulik,
yeah, and how he tends to, yeah, and how he kind of injected himself into this weird sort of conversation about gender where he just sort of kept coming back even though he said he didn't want to be part of it. And I mean, this is, I think, a good example of that. Maybe, you know, we lose out, but you know, if they want to kind of avoid making this a bigger thing than it is, you know, I guess the woman you're talking about, Shigehara, she gave her opinion, but she didn't necessarily, you know, she did it in a smart way, I would say. And if they're just kind of removing themselves from, you know, and maybe I'm making this to be a bigger thing than it is, but I would say that, you know, unfortunately, if it sucks for us, but at least this way, they don't have to deal with any sort of weird backlash that could somehow end up becoming a bigger monster than they initially anticipated. So,
yeah, totally. I mean, it's interesting because I completely agree with what you're saying. But on the other hand, that's exactly the same kind of logic, the same process whereby people say Amos and Andy isn't racist. They're just like, well, that was just how humor worked at the time. If you're in the system, you can see that it's not really about, you know what I mean? It's an interesting, because you're right, again, that in Magic, black doesn't have anything to do with race at all. But you know, it exists outside of Magic as well. So that's why. So the Lore of Shigehara thing is very interesting to me. Let's backtrack to the Mike, what's his name thing, the Gabe thing, because that was a whole different podcast. That was an alternate universe, as far as anybody listening to this might be concerned. So for anyone who doesn't know, and you know, most citizens of the internet are at least a little bit aware by now, but Gabe, one of the two Penny Arcade guys, the guy who does the art, has a bit of an image PR problem. Penny Arcade did a comic a long while ago called The Sixth Slave, where the joke was that the MMORPG hero was saving these slaves from some horrible mine or whatever, and he had already saved the right number, and so there was this this one that wanted to be saved as well, and he was like, "Hey, I already got my five slaves. I'm out of here." And the guy was talking about all the horrible things that happened to him, and one of them involved a rape joke. And people took issue with that, and Penny Arcade sort of misunderstood what people were taking issue with and snapped back in the snarkiest, douchiest way imaginable, and it just sort of escalated from there. So it becomes this difficult thing where Gabe can't say anything in public without people kind of coming after him, and then when people come after him, he's decided he has a license to behave like a complete asshole. Because damn it, I'm being bullied, you know. And so what we talked about in the other podcast is, I think Brian and I, your friend Brian, whose podcast it was, he sort of thought that it was valid to think of Gabe as being bullied. And I disagreed, because I think it's a pretty rare circumstance in which a rich celebrity white man can be said to be bullied by random, you know, non-white, non-cis, non-straight people on Twitter. I don't think that's how bullying really works. It's always about punching down, right? So all of that to say, the Lore of Shigehara thing in the case of the Indie Custom Cube is interesting, because, like, does it change the calculus that it wasn't all white men making this, or do you have to judge the thing itself in isolation? Or it's all very strange to me.
It is, and you know, I really feel bad, because I feel like there is this sort of unintentional lens with which we see things, and I think you're absolutely right. It exists outside of the Magic world. Maybe there's something to infer from the fact that that's what they decided to do with the Soldier Boy card. That's the one I couldn't find right now. I don't know if you have it up, but
I couldn't find it. I should have saved it, because it didn't even occur to me they were going to take down the site. Like, it's nuts to me.
You know, I mean, the argument about races, I really feel like it has to come down to context. I feel like, you know, we do say, and you were absolutely right, that we can't always split hairs, but I feel like it's really important to try, because I think context says a lot. You know, me using the word, I don't know about the format, but I'll just say me using that certain word.
Hold on. Let's say this right now. We're going to have an explicit tag wherever we get published. So don't, to me, saying, you know, the N word is far more offensive than saying the word nigger.
I agree. I'd take the Louis C.K. approach as well.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah, because, I mean, again, let's be clear to anybody listening. Let's just lay these ground rules out right now. And I'm glad we're getting to this in the first one of these we did, because that's good. But it's like, to call somebody by that word is entirely different from discussing the word and saying the word you're talking about. To do this weird kind of evasive dance to keep from saying the thing you're talking about just kind of lends it this magical totemic power, like it's the word Beetlejuice, you know, and it's not. It's a horrible, hateful word with an historical context, and we should be able to talk about it. So that's how I feel.
That's absolutely my hang up with sort of putting it in the closet and calling it by another name. But So certainly me using the word nigger with a friend, you know, whether it's the ER or the A or whatever, you know, version of the word.
Makes all the difference. Well, hold on. Quick, tell the white people. Does it make a difference? We need to know. Is it okay? Is it okay if we use the A?
And you know, and then there is a difference between even just a white man enjoying rap music in his car, you know, and singing along. And right. I mean, you know, that's I love music. So as far as I'm concerned, if a guy wants to sing along, yeah, more power to him. But there's a difference between that and then him yelling that at, you know, a black man surrounded by, you know, four of his other white friends. There's a clear world of difference.
The social context is very different if his window is up versus down. And
Yes, exactly. And so, again, just to reiterate, you're absolutely right. It exists in a world outside of Magic. We do need to kind of consider maybe what effect that would have on the people playing, on the people observing, on these developers, you know, presenting it to a world outside of their own niche of friends. But at the same time, I think it's important to consider that, you know, a lot of these indie developers were, to reference back to the Dick Wolves incident, are totally behind the people of, you know, the LGBT community, the ones who are, you know, not going to be going to PAX because they just don't agree with that viewpoint. And, you know, I find it hard to believe that those kind of people who are, you know, very creative, like to get together and have fun, would have anything sort of malicious in their heart. And so in that respect, to me, I think it's sort of a non-issue, but
yeah,
I can see what you mean by it's tricky to, you know.
Yeah, well, I see it from both sides. You know, on one hand, if you're any kind of racial or gender or sexual minority, you feel like there's about three places in the world where you can be safe and not feel like you're, like, people are, you know, taking on a mean joke at your expense. This comes up a lot, especially with transgendered people, because they're, you know, even comedians who are otherwise pretty progressive will, for example, if they're trying to describe some kind of sex act that they want to make extra depraved, they'll throw in the word tranny. Right.
Yeah.
That happens all the time. True. So I get that side where it's like, damn it, you know, can't indie games be safe? Can't anything be safe? But I also get that if you're making this thing and it's for your community, like I'm talking indie developers now, you want to be able to just put it out there without having to worry about whether, you know, something that means one thing to you, a black card in Magic, is going to take on this whole other meaning that the wider world, you know, associates with. Because obviously, you know, the history of what black means in the English language is all wrapped up with race. But it, you know, but because it's so big and so complicated, you can't assign all of that baggage to every time the word gets used. That would just be crazy. We wouldn't be able to use words in that case.
And I don't think there'd be any progress if we didn't stop thinking of it that way.
Yeah, totally. You know, yeah, totally.
It's really important. You know, you brought up a really good point. Again, I feel bad referring to a previous podcast. It's not this one, but there were a lot of good points made.
We'll link to it. That's what, so for anybody, just FYI, everybody, just so you know we're getting into, if you go to the podcast we're going to link to, it's like 4 hours of madness and talking. And it's good. They're 4 good hours. But anyway, we'll link to
one
that.
Of those hours is all about the topic of gender and Mr. Gabe.
Largely about Mr.
No, I was going to say you made a really good point that I liked, which was that there tends to be this issue, there tends to be this thought of, oh, I'm not racist, therefore X, which is
right.
Sort of a falsehood. I liked what you said that, you know, we all have our own prejudices, whether they're racial or, you know, otherwise. And it's important just to check ourselves constantly. And it doesn't need to be the kind of a thing where, you know, we need to, like, shame ourselves or necessarily shame others, but to be willing to open a dialogue and to, you know, in this case, for example, if I'm assuming Shigehara responded in the proper way, you know, it opened a dialogue and she didn't necessarily respond, you know, in a defensive manner. She just, you know, because I think that's what's missing in a lot of these things is, you know, I can't remember his name, but the actor from Seinfeld.
Michael Richards.
Michael Richards, you know, he said something and then it blew up and then it kind of went away. And in the whole storm, I don't really remember that there was a dialogue. I feel like there's a lot of times these things will come up and there will be an attempt. I'll see maybe one or two articles that say, hey, shouldn't we be talking about this? And then it just kind of goes away.
Yeah, the closest thing there was to a dialogue with the Michael Richards thing was that Curb Your Enthusiasm episode. Did you see that? They did like kind of a meta.
I didn't. I wanted to see it, but no, I missed it.
So I can't remember who it was. There's some black comedian who plays this guy who essentially ends up playing kind of a mean joke on Michael Richards, and he's confronting this guy and he's like, I'm so mad at you. If only there were some horrible name I could call you that. And then he turns and there's like a crowd looking at him, filming him with cell phones. You know, it's like, but the first thing is when the guy shows up and he's wearing like some kind of, you know, some kind of like vaguely Muslimish hat. And the guy's like, I'm sorry. I said I was sorry. Please don't hurt me. You know, like it's, so it's just like all this stuff that's going on beneath the surface in lieu of a dialogue was the closest we came to having the dialogue, which is bad.
And I think it continues to happen. I think the dialogue is happening in small circles, and that's good. That's better than nothing.
That's always how it starts. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. It's interesting. Because, I mean, certainly, let's be clear about this. I want to say this. Game culture and geek culture and all that stuff is not perfect when it comes to all this.
No, in fact, I would say that we're relatively inexperienced and inequipped to deal with it because it has been a larger representation of, as you say, sort of like these privileged white people being the cusp of the culture. And I think even in the heyday, you know, Japanese games featured, you know, white characters. I mean, Nintendo's mascot is an Italian plumber.
Yeah, yeah. Well, any obsession with Western-style castles. And, like, there's all kinds of weird...
And so it's never really been at the forefront. And not necessarily that it is more so now, but there's definitely more people playing games than ever. There's a bigger diversity of people, I would say, you know, whether they are transgender or gay. One of my favorite subreddits to peek into every now and then is there's a... a subreddit on reddit.com called Game Bros, GAYMEBROS. And it's actually really cool. It's just a little community for gay guys who like playing video games. And,
that's awesome. I mean, have you read Gay Gamer at all? Gay Gamer is a really good blog that's semi-similar. Yeah,
so I just, you know, I think that as it becomes more apparent that we have these people sharing the same, you know, love of games that or culture, geek, whatever you want to call it, that we do, that dialogue is going to become more and more important in the same way that, you know, people of color entering into, you know, the world of film or the world of stage or, you know, literature, you know, just as it becomes more apparent that, oh, yeah, there's this demographic, too. I think hopefully the discussion will become more and more open and consistent. I mean,
yeah, definitely. I mean, I was talking to Davey Reedon about this, the guy who made the Stanley Parable. And we were talking about how game culture has very much always been marketed to like it hasn't been what gamers think is cool so much as what some middle-aged man thinks some teenage boy will think is cool, with everyone in the equation being presumed straight and cisgendered and white. And
that's Battlefield Ghost Dog.
Yeah, exactly. Battlefield Ghost of Duty 6 or whatever, you know, whatever it is. I mean, like, Ghost is a really interesting one. I haven't played it yet, but from everything I've read, it seems like it's become so bland you can't even, like, it's just a completely homogenous object. It's just like gruel.
Yeah,
you know?
I read a little bit about it. I didn't even know it took place in the future, and that was
I
don't know, it was a weird concept.
I don't know. Well, I mean, it's the logical extreme of, like, they went from a grounded historical, this was a real war thing, to a sort of speculative propaganda infused view of the war on terror. So yeah, why not go full future? Makes sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, all of that to say, you know, gaming has never just been straight white boys, but we are starting to have to admit that it's not.
That's what I was trying to get at is that, yeah.
Because one of the, correct me if I'm wrong, I think she was at EA, but one of the sort of founders of gaming was transgendered. Got to look up her name now.
That wouldn't surprise me, but I'm not sure I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, so all of that, you know, facts aside, hey, I didn't over-prepare. I didn't know that one. There you go. But it's, you know, it's never been quite as homogenous as we want it to be, but... there's been this...
as we want it to be?
Well, as we want... sure, that was maybe Freudian. What I mean is, like, as we as a culture like to imagine it is to keep things simple, is what I mean. Right?
I think,
we have this image of the geek as the
skinny white guy or the overweight white guy. It's like one
right.
or the other.
Yeah, exactly. He's either shaped like Mario or Luigi. He's probably somewhere on the autism spectrum. And he's hyper intelligent, and the world doesn't understand him, and whatever, you know, like we have this image that has never been sufficient to take on. Laurie Penny talks about this. She's a British writer, and she wrote this thing about cyber sexism and, you know, harassment and stuff. And she wrote about how, like, what she tries to get across when she talks to male geeks is that they, you know, female geeks were there too, like all of it. They were there too. They were there for the awkwardness. They were there for the sexual frustration, the being into weird stuff, and not knowing who to talk to about it. That wasn't ever just a straight white man thing. And yet, we've, you know, there's a certain class of straight white men who have carved out this space where that's where they're safe. And, you know, anybody who's been bullied, who gets a modicum of power, has to really, really work hard to not become the bully.
Yeah.
That's the dangerous thing.
Yeah. I don't know that there's any greater point. It's just a little pleasurable aside. But some of the most awkward, uncomfortable, like weird little people I've met are women and black men, as far as like whole like nerd culture goes. I had a guy come into Starbucks once, and he was wearing a. I don't know if you're familiar with the show Phineas and Ferb.
Sure, yeah.
He was wearing a. I think his name is Gary. Gary the Platypus hat, and somehow we just ended up talking, and it ended up that this guy was a huge fan of Pokemon. Like he was ready to go pick up the, I think the XY. But it was so funny because other than he had the hat, but he was also wearing the saggy pants with his like underwear showing, and he had, you know, the oversized jacket, and he looking pretty thugged out for the most part. But when he opened his mouth, it was just this sort of really like calm voice, and he was just talking with such passion about like, he's like, yeah, you know, I really like Pokemon. And I was telling him like, I've had kind of issues with it. Like, I still love it. He's like, he's just never found a problem with it every time he plays it. And it's one of those things too where I don't know that I would say he's as entrenched in sort of that culture in the same way that he goes out and tries other games. Like maybe for him it's just Pokemon, and maybe I read a little too much into it, but I just like that he had that aspect of it to him, because a lot of people, nerd or not, probably wouldn't have thought that, you know, they probably wouldn't have given him that benefit of the doubt.
It's not an all or nothing proposition, right? Being into Pokemon doesn't mean you have to, you know, look like Steve Urkel or whatever. If you're, you know, yeah. I was just trying to think what the prototypical black nerd looks like if we have one, right? You don't have to do that. You can be into, like, I work with a woman who is a really, really amazing programmer, but she really resists ever being characterized as a geek. She's not into games. She's not into fantasy. She, you know, she kind of like dresses girly and she feels like she has to sort of confront the world with that. Like, yeah, this is who I am, but really there shouldn't be a conflict there. And she's right that there is. She's right that people perceive that she's going to be into Lord of the Rings or whatever.
Yeah.
But really she just is who she is. She's good at what she's good at. She likes what she likes. And that's all anything is, you know. And the good thing about being an adult is you can do that. You don't have to put yourself in a box or find a clique and cling to it to survive. You can just like what you like and be a good person.
Yeah. No, I would agree for sure.
All right.
So we're at the 30-minute mark. I don't know if you wanted to just consider this.
Well, I'm going to assume we edited it out, but 5 minutes of that was me coughing.
Oh, I guess that's true.
No, that's fine. No, I think we've reached a natural stopping place. All right. So that is this. I think we're going to keep doing these because I feel like this went well.
I really enjoyed this.
Awesome. So we'll keep these going. Thank you for listening, everybody. We are on iTunes. We are on Stitcher. We are on Podbay because everything is on Podbay. You can actually find our newest episodes on SoundCloud as well for now, or you can subscribe using good old-fashioned RSS. Any surface you happen to be standing near probably has this podcast on it in some way or another. So, and also you can check out the blog at etao.wordpress.com. Thank you for listening.